Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio here at 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Today on Midwest Beats, we've got a couple of special guests. Second hour, we'll be celebrating Christmas a little bit early with Grant Fitch, a local actor and storyteller, and he'll be telling some Christmas stories this Saturday and next. We'll get to that a little later. First up, we've got Mr. Kip Winger, the namesake of the Winger Band that, of course, you remember for such songs as 17, Madeleine, and Headed for the Heartbreak. Kip has been very busy in recent years. In fact, he's doing some things that his older fans might not have suspected back in the day. He's quite the virtuoso. We'll be playing some things from a Broadway production he's been a part of, as well as some classical. But yeah, you'll hear all the hits. In fact, let's start by letting the music do the talking and taking you back to that debut album that put him on the charts. Let's head for the heartbreak and welcome Kip Winger after this.
I
Kip Winger coming to town. I'm sure you'll hear that and all the big hits on Sunday, December 15th at The Room in Highland. Mush Music is presenting it, my friend Paul Pancinelli, and I am so happy that we are able to connect with Mr. Kip Winger himself. It's been a number of years since I've talked to this gentleman, and Kip, thank you for joining us.
Hey, man. Happy to be here. How you doing?
Doing good. Last time we talked would have been when the Winger 4 album came out, around, what, 2006 or 7. But you have been very, very busy, and we're going to talk about some of the things you've been doing, the theatrical productions. You were nominated for a Grammy for something that is definitely different from the stuff a lot of fans know you for. But let's talk about the tour and what's going on right now. Is there any new music coming out that you're supporting with this tour?
You know what? It's not really a traditional tour like people think. I play almost every weekend, so basically my whole life is one big tour. And so I am in the process of making a couple new albums, actually a new solo album, and I'm just about to start doing a Winger album with Reb. He's flying in today, actually. So new music on the way, but I'm always out there playing gigs. You can always find me on my webpage. I'm playing all over the world all the time.
Okay. Now, is this show on Sunday, the 15th of December, in The Room in Highland, is this a full band show?
It's not. It's a solo show. I'm doing, I have a percussionist that I play with. And so you can see a lot of examples of what I do online, like YouTube and such. But I do all the Winger hits. I do a bunch of my solo stuff, and, you know, bring people up to sing and get to know the audience. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it, not because it's me, but it's a lot of fun, and, it's a great gig. I would love it.
Okay. What got you into music? Now, I know, and we're going to touch on some of the art side of things. I know you were into ballet and classical music as a young man, and that has always been a part of your career, as well as the rock and roll. But what drove you into show business, per se, as an artist? Where did that all start? Where was the seed planted?
In a band with my two brothers when I was 8 years old. My parents were in a jazz band, so they gave us instruments at Christmas, and we just started jamming from there. I mean, my mom would help me figure out, parts by ear off the record, and, you know, me and my brothers would throw the music together, and we started doing gigs when I was very, very young, so 8 or 9 years old, and we grew up in a band together playing, elementary school, junior high school, proms, all the bars. And, I just have been doing it, performing live since I was about 8 years old.
Okay. Your brothers stay with it?
They did. Not as much as I do. One of my brothers recently passed away. But, yeah, he was actively a musician until then, and my other brother was a producer for a while. He produced Lillian Axe, and he did a lot of other stuff. Really good guitar player, amazing singer, good producer. So, musical family, and I just always, the fire never burns out on me. I've got more ideas now than I did back then. So.
Mm-hmm. You started out doing classical as a teenager, too, along with the rock and roll. What drove you into the classical side?
You know what? It's a myth that I grew up doing classical music. I grew up playing 70s rock, like Grand Funk, Jethro Tull, all that kind of stuff. And at 16, I studied classical guitar and got an ear for Baroque music, and that's kind of what set me off. And then at about 18, I started studying ballet, and then I heard Stravinsky and Ravel and Debussy and Tchaikovsky and all that. And then I was even more inspired. So I originally took ballet because I wanted to just be a better performer, and heard the music and thought, wow, and it really moved me. And I thought, and over the years, I noticed that I was hearing that kind of music, but it took a very long time for me to actually become a composer. I didn't even start until I was 35.
Uh-huh.
And so I studied some composition in New York when I was 21, 22. I always tried to keep up with studying scores and stuff like that, but I didn't really learn how to wield an orchestra or even start learning until I was about 35. And that was well after you know, the third Winger album was gone, and the 80s was
a memory,
you know, a toxic environment with the grunge coming in, you know. And that was actually one of the things that drove me to do it, because I'd always wanted to do it, but I was very, very busy. And so all of a sudden, when you're out of a job, so to speak, I rather than drinking myself to death, I decided to study and fill my long life dream of, you know, writing orchestra music. But it wasn't, I didn't start that way. People kind of get a Poindexter-y image of me having studied classical when I was a kid, but it's just not true. I was wielding, Grand Funk on the bass for until I was, you know, and then my band.
We've got playing underneath us right now, Ghost 3, which is something you did recently, and it was Grammy nominated. This is with the San Francisco Ballet. Tell us a little bit about the writing of this. We're going to bring it up for just a second here, and then we're going to talk with Kip about how this all came together and where it's taking him. That's just a little bit of sample of a 7-minute piece, Ghost 3. Is it pronounced Adagio?
Yeah.
Now, that's with the San Francisco Ballet. You are recording that and producing that as C.F. Kip Winger. What is the C.F.?
Charles Frederick. That's my given name.
Okay. So tell me about this piece.
Well, that piece was... I originally sent that to a choreographer who's now very famous, named Christopher Wheeldon. And my original intention for writing classical music was to write music for ballet. So I had met him, and I sent him the music. He liked it, and I didn't hear from him for a long time. And then all of a sudden, I got an email from him saying, hey, I'd love to use Ghost for San Francisco Ballet. And, of course, that was amazing for me, a great opportunity, and, very, very lucky to get that. And so I became friends with the conductor at San Francisco Ballet Orchestra, Martin West, and they wanted to make an album of my music. And so I wrote Conversations with Nijinsky, which is actually the piece that got nominated for Best Composition.
Okay.
But the Ghosts, Conversations with Nijinsky, and another piece called A Parting Grace were on that album. And the Grammy nomination was completely unexpected, and I feel very, very honored and lucky to be on the list with the other composers that were involved in that, and every year, because it's not easy to kind of get in that club, you know. And I just really, my path is one of labor of love. I mean, I just did it. It all comes purely from my heart, and I'm not, I'm basically the guy that can't live without doing it. So, you know, that's kind of where that came from.
Now, what's this leading to? You've had success. You've gotten the recognition and the accolades. Has it inspired you to continue in this genre?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I'm currently writing Symphony No. 1 for Nashville Symphony. They commissioned me to do that and one more piece because they're going to make an album with my new classical music. So I'm currently, I just finished the third movement basically last night, actually. And it's 4 movements, so I have one more movement to write for that, and then a violin concerto for them. And like I say, Reb's on his way here, so we're going to start making a Winger album. And it took me a long time, to be honest with you, to kind of grapple with the three dimensions. And now actually there's kind of a fourth dimension with the musical theater piece, aspects of what I do, because I worked individually on each element of them for so long. And now I'm, 58, and they've all come completely into focus, you know. So... I basically just juggle. I juggle back and forth between the projects, and one inspires the other. Mm-hmm. It's actually a fantastic, fertile, creative ground for me to work in, because if I get stuck on a classical thing, I can move over to the rock thing, and one inspires the other.
With your rock albums with Winger and your rock albums as a solo artist, how do you know which format to take a song to? If you write a song, is it a Kip Winger song? Is it a Winger band song? How do you differentiate and know where to put that song?
Well, the clearest defining factor is Reb Beach. So okay. when I make Winger records, it's Reb Beach and Kip Winger sitting down to write songs. I wrote Headed for Heartbreak myself, but I mean, there's some songs I write and I can clearly see if they're band songs, you know. But basically, the defining factor is Reb Beach's guitar riffs, and the solo stuff is much more experimental, completely free to do. Experimenting with sounds and anything that I can feel creative about that fits into that genre. And then the classical is very clearly my attempt at writing, legit contemporary classical music in the language that you can speak to the orchestra about, which is very different than any of this other stuff.
Okay, and I did promise my listeners we would touch on some of the hits and take you back to the 80s, but before we do that, I'm fascinated by the growth and evolution you've had, and you did talk a little bit about some of the theater stuff that you had done. I'd like to play a cut in just a moment here from Get Jack, a killer musical. Give us a little front cell on this song, Theater of Blood, which reminds me in some parts a little bit of your old boss, Alice Cooper.
It's funny, yeah. Well, okay, so I wrote this musical with Damian Gray, who's mm-hmm. a great writer. He wrote all the words, and it was very, the key here for me that was very interesting is that he wrote all the words first, and I'd never done that. I've always written songs to just the music and then written the lyrics afterwards, but I wrote this whole musical to his words, and it was very freeing because I could just take the words and just do with it, you know, whatever I wanted to with them, and some of the more like avant-garde orchestral thing. So Theater of Blood is a section of the, well, it's Jack's singing. The musical is about Jack, the five women Jack the Ripper killed. And so we immortalized the women, but Jack the Ripper's obviously in it. And this is a song where he's, kind of fantasizing about himself. it's black comedy, basically.
Right, right. All right, we're going to play this, and we'll be back with Kip Winger to talk about all things Kip, 80s, and more. Theater of Blood. CF Kip Winger and Damian Gray gave us that one from Get Jack.
Hunting a killer who's gaining regard. Up until now, Metro claimed gang violence. But I'd say it's a man who needs to be silenced. A killer goes wild, one harder than the next. A real taste for blood and a slice to the neck. The Star of Whitechapel dazzles at night. His act is murder, he'd cut on stage fright.
Welcome to the Theater of Blood. The reviews have hit the papers and they drive us through the mud. Welcome to the Theater of Blood.
They might think twice for giving a pumping. A charming gent is sweet to the starving. His brand of passion, very alarming. Horse-trotter gents like beast-trotter honey. A dirty old waltz in an alley gets some money. A well-mannered gent puts horse at the rail. him. At night he becomes a whole different thing. Delusional cloud over his reason. Savage rage in the eyes of a demon. A battle goes on between two wolves in his mind. One wolf is good, the other unkind. Hunger can fill such a terrible need. Which wolf will win? It's the one that he feeds.
Welcome to the Theater of Blood. The reviews have hit the papers and they drag us through the mud. Welcome to the Theater of Blood. Bear witness to the legend that the monster has become. Welcome to the Theater of Blood.
Welcome to the Theater of Blood. Welcome to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio, where my guest today for the first hour is Kip Winger. Yeah, that Kip Winger from the Alice Cooper days, the Alan Parsons days, the Winger Band days, and now theatrical composer, ballet, classical composer, well-rounded entertainer and musician. And Kip, how hard was it to write that musical? That's your first musical, correct?
Yeah, it was extraordinarily difficult. It took me 3.5 years. I mean, I didn't do anything other than that. So, for example, on that song, I didn't know how to write big band horns. I had to pull out my books and study how to do that. You know,
mm-hmm.
But that's what I love. I mean, I'm a total music theory geek, and I love to study and learn about how sounds are made and stuff like that. So. It was great for me because it was really a huge learning curve, and I have no experience in the theater world, and I was learning everything along the way. And so, but it did. It took me 3.5 years. My symphony that I'm just working on is taking about a year. So, it was a lot of work. But I really feel like, in one ironic way, it's the best place for me to be because I was able to put all my classical and all my rock together and write for singers. So everything I do, everything in my toolkit was right there in that musical. You know, if you buy the soundtrack or you stream the soundtrack, you hear like everything I know how to do is in that musical.
Through the kitchen sink in there.
Basically, yeah.
Now, it's done pretty well, and you've had a rotating cast of different singers. Will this be something going on the road? Will it be coming to Chicago?
So the thing is that we haven't actually gotten it up on stage yet. We've done several workshops with different casts, yeah, and we're trying to get it in a theater, and it's extremely heavy lift. You know, it takes a long time, and you know, I believe Hamilton took 10 years from the time the guy was writing it until it made it to the stage. And every other musical that anybody you ever talk to about them, it's extraordinarily time consuming. It takes years to get it happening. So we're still pushing, and we have a great team. And so, we'll see how it goes.
All right. My thing
in life is to, you know, is to just do the things that I love and see where they go. I'm never so attached to the outcome, although I want success as much as the next guy, but I don't let the goal of success, you know, deter me from trying something new or trying something that I want to do. And many people told me, "Oh, good luck with that," because it's impossible to get a musical off the ground. And my point was like, "Yeah, but I want to learn how to do this." You know,
mm-hmm. Have you had some bites on it? Have you found interest in it?
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Sure. We're in good shape right now, but it's just very time-consuming. It takes a long time, a lot of money.
I can understand that. Hopefully you'll keep the cast you've got attached to it for the long run, because the stuff I've heard off the soundtrack and the streams has been pretty impressive.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I do want to talk about the fact that Winger as a band was named after you. Now, you were performing as different band names, and it was Alice Cooper who suggested, as I recall, that you call the band Winger. And I've always been fascinated by that because a lot of times when a band is named after a specific member, it can kind of bite them in the behind. And I remember talking to Ronnie Montrose, and he said the worst thing he ever did was name his band after him, because when he wanted to expand past the hard rock sound and he did his jazz stuff, people wouldn't accept it because they thought, oh, Montrose, and they linked it to hard rock. Now, it seems like you've been able to get around that curse, if it is. Any regrets about naming it Winger?
Well, no, I don't have any regrets, although I never thought it was a great band name. You know, Alice was like, it's a great band name, man. I'm like, really? You know, I totally didn't get it. But we were originally called Sahara, and that was, we had the artwork done and everything. So, you know, and then all of a sudden we get a, you know, a cease and desist letter from a lawyer right before the album comes out going, we own that name. So, you know, it was like, think fast, and we had already gone, I don't know, are you a musician at all?
No, I'm not. I've just been a big fan, and I produce concerts and different things over the different decades of my career.
Well, for all the musicians out there who've been in bands, you know, it's like, how many how about parties can you have? Like, how about this? How about that? What about that name? You know, and so we just, we kind of defaulted to Winger, and I don't have any regrets about it. I mean, it didn't help me in the when the grunge era hit and all that stuff went down. But my theory in life was just keep my head down and keep learning music, keep writing music, keep trying to expand my, you know, horizons and grow my skills and let the music speak for itself. And over time, it's worked, you know. It's I get a lot of our shows, a lot of young people, because now the internet has exposed, there's no like time capsule that you're in necessarily. A lot of young people are really into the music of 20 years ago. So we have just as many young fans around the world as we do that were there in the beginning. And I just maintain that if you don't compromise on quality and you're a good self-editor and you don't believe, you have to really understand which ideas you have are good and which ones really aren't that good. And the ratio is like 5 good ones to 95 bad ones, you know, and I'm pretty honest with myself about my music and what things I think are publishable and which things are worth deleting. And I just kept going, you know, that's kind of how I tend to overcome that all.
Looking back at that first album, a song like 17, there is no denying the success it had, thanks to MTV in part two. But when you look back as a mature songwriter now, and you're writing kind of a bubblegummy boy meets girl kind of falls in love, lustful thing, it was very of the time, of the 80s. Do you still enjoy playing it as much as you did when it was a hit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is, man, that I'm very proud of, by the way. That was the first riff that Reb Beach ever played me. He's like, man, I wrote this when I was 15. I don't know what to do with it. And I was like, I know what to do with that. And the thing is what I'm really proud of is that when you could see other bands, we've seen many bands over time try to cover that song. Mm-hmm. It's extraordinarily difficult to play that song. So the poppy lyrics on top of it, I mean, I'll just be honest with you. I mean, I stole it from Kingdom Come. They had a song on their album called 17, and I was dry that day, and I thought, man, I need a title. So I picked up that title and wrote the tune. And if you notice in the verse, it's a little bit like the grunge by Led Zeppelin, where it's got that kind of skip beat thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fun to play that song. It's not easy to play that song. It's not easy to play and sing it. But we take a lot of flack for it, and they're like, oh, man, you're so old, and you're singing about 17. I'm like, what do you mean? Paul McCartney is 75 years old, and he gets up and sings, well, she was just 17. I'm like, that's pretty good company. I'll take it.
Yep, and you're in that company, too, with the classical now, too. Paul was one that took the fence post down and wandered through the pasture there and came up with some great stuff as well out of his normal niche.
Well, I mean, you know, he, obviously he's a hero of mine and probably every other musician in the world. And one of the key things to recognize there is that he wanted to do something and he did it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the path that I've chosen to take, you know.
Why bass? Was that always your first instrument?
It's a really good question. I always wanted to play bass, but, you know, when my parents brought home one Christmas a guitar and some drums, one Christmas they thought I might be too young to start because my older brothers are 2 and 3 years older than I am. And so the only thing left was bass.
I hear that from a lot of bass players. It's by default you kind of gravitated to bass, but you've done so well that you've made it a lead instrument in so much of your work.
Well, I'm in the camp. I'm not a lead singer, man. I'm not one of the guys that just stands up with the mic. I'm very uncomfortable when I stand up with the mic without a bass. You know, I'm in the Sting, Paul McCartney, Geddy Lee, Peter Cetera camp, mm-hmm. where we play and sing, you know.
Now, for the solo show that you're doing, you said you have percussionists, but are you playing bass and guitar or just guitar? How are you doing solo stuff?
Right. So I play a 12 string and I was always, I always played guitar. I mean, I always played guitar. In the band, I always played bass, but I studied classical guitar. I mean, I can play the guitar, you know, well. I can't play a lead to save my life. Like, if you ask me to do a solo, mm-hmm. never going to happen. But so I do my solo act 12 string acoustic and a percussionist, and then I play some piano songs and kind of spread it out like that. I'll put all the hits on a bunch of my solo stuff.
Okay, let's play a solo song. I've got Miles Away. I've got Every Story Told. Which of those those are two of my favorites. Which would you like to play? And is there a story behind either?
Well, I mean, I would play Every Story Told. Everybody knows Miles Away, and you know, every night when I do my solo concert, I bring somebody up to sing Miles Away with me. So be ready out there. Every Story Told is a track I wrote with a friend of mine in Istanbul named Cenk Eroglu, who contacted me in 2002 or 2003, something like that. And I just had a vibe on him, and I just got on a plane and went to Istanbul, and he became a really good music partner for a while, and we wrote a lot of songs on my third solo album, and this Every Story Told opens the From the Moon to the Sun record, and it's a cool track. I really like that song. I appreciate you noticing that one.
I love the album cover on that too, The Moon to the Sun. Great graphics.
Thank you.
All right, this is Every Story Told from Moon to the Sun. Kip Winger, who's performing Sunday, December 15th at The Room in Highland at 8353 Indianapolis Boulevard. Get information at ticketweb.com, and we'll be back with Kip after this. taking you from the moon to the sun. Every story told, Kip Winger off a solo album. Your most recent, correct, Kip?
Oh, yeah. It's funny that you say most recent. I mean, it was a long time ago, and it's funny. I just haven't had time to get back to the solo thing. A lot of people have been asking me to do another one, and right now I've got, I think, four or five tunes. One's finished, two are almost done, and I'm, you know, working on it. But yeah, that was my most recent one.
Okay, and a new one coming up along with a Winger album, Reb Beach, working with you still on the Winger stuff. What's the relationship with Rod Morgenstein?
Oh, I don't do the band without Reb and Rod. I mean,
okay,
Reb and Rod have been in the band since the very beginning,
right.
Played on every album, and I used to hate it when I'd go see a band and then it was, you know, a bunch of other players, so not the original guy. So I just don't want to go on stage without those guys. And by the way, it's an unbelievable privilege to be on stage with them. I look to my left and see Reb, and then look around and see Rod, it's amazing, you know. So I don't want to do the band without them, and so far I've never needed to.
Well, Rod went on with the Dregs. What's Reb been doing when he's not doing Winger stuff?
Reb is the longest standing member in Whitesnake. He's been in Whitesnake for 18 years.
So he juggles both. Okay.
He does, yeah. And he's also played in Night Ranger, Alice Cooper, Dokken, you know, he's done a lot of stuff. So at some point soon we're gonna refocus on Winger and you know, go back out for the last however many years go round, and we're all very committed to it because it's our first love, you know.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Alice Cooper, and we've talked about Alice's influence on the band, and all of you have basically played at some point in there. How did you come to work with Alice? And then I want to touch a little bit about how you gravitated over to Alan Parsons, because I understand Alan had a bit of an impact on your career as well.
So there's a producer named Bo Hill who I was very close to when I was a kid. He had his own band called Airborne in Denver, Colorado. That's where I was. And my manager at the time met him backstage at a Heart concert. And we met with him, and he produced me and my brothers. And then he went on to move to New York and become a really well-known producer. And I moved to New York. And one day he was producing Alice. He had produced Rat's first album, and that really blew up huge. And one day he was producing Alice Cooper's Constrictor album, and he called me up one day because they needed a bass player for four songs. So I went in and tracked those four songs and really hit it off with Alice because I was a huge fan and I really knew a lot about him. And Kane Roberts was his guitar player, and I really hit it off with Kane. And it was actually Kane that suggested that I mentioned to Alice, if they go on tour, you know, I'm available and I'd love to do it. And they called me up. So it was right place, right time, being ready for it and all of that. And I played in that for a while, and then I split and to do my own thing with Alice's blessing. He's a very generous, I could go on and on and on about Alice Cooper. He's incredibly funny and very generous and an incredible performer. Mm-hmm. I learned so much from him. I mean, it was really like going to rock star boot camp when you're in Alice Cooper, you know. And then I left and did my band. And then years later, I met Alan Parsons at a Jim Peterik benefit.
Oh, Jim's a good friend of mine. He does a lot of shows here with us, and Survivor was kind of like the house band at my nightclub right before they signed with Scotty Brothers, and we've been friends for years and years. What a good guy.
Super nice guy, incredibly talented, mm-hmm. and so I did his benefit one year. Alan Parsons was there.
That was one of those shows, right? World Stage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't think much of it. I mean, I'm a huge fan, one day I was in the L.A. airport, and I got a phone call, and he was just, "Hello, Kip, it's Alan Parsons. You know, I'd like you to be my singer." And I was just like, "Tell me where to show up." I mean, that was one of those unbelievable, life-changing phone calls. And what's amazing about it, to give you a clue into who Alan really is, I sent him my demo tape when I was 15 years old with my brothers because we were trying to, you know, make it and get a record deal, all that. And he actually wrote me back. And, you know, I saved that letter all those years. He sent me back a very nice letter. I'm not producing anybody at this time, but your band sounds great. You might need a little work on lyrics. He was being nice because our lyrics were awful. So when I got in his band, the first rehearsal, man, I walked up to him, showed him that letter that I'd been carrying around all that time that he wrote me back when I was 15. You know, that's who he is. He's another super generous, really beautiful guy and amazingly talented. He's got a great band. I did it for a while, and then my schedule just wasn't allowing me to hang in. And now PJ Olson's the singer, and he's a great singer. You know, that was really fun to be able to play all those songs.
You've had a lot of, as I call them, pinch me moments. The Alice Cooper, the Alan Parsons, the different things you've talked about, being, you know, sat down and writing a symphony and writing all these things. What is your favorite aha moment that you could pinpoint at this point, just spontaneously? What is one of the greatest highlights?
In my career, I mean, getting a text from my friend saying congratulations on your nomination for a best composition, the best classical composition. That was the crowning jewel because let's be honest. When the 80s came down, I mean, I was at the scene of the crime, and I had a very long distance to rebuild my reputation, and so. That was the crowning jewel of my career.
Okay.
So far.
Now, you mentioned Kane Roberts. He was, you guys seemed to bond pretty well, and you alluded to that. What's he doing these days, and are you doing any kind of work with him anymore? I've heard his name in years.
Well, yeah, he put an album out on Frontiers Records, which is the same label I use recently.
And out of Italy?
A great album. Yep.
Okay.
I think it's called The New Normal, and it's amazing. Kane is incredibly talented, and he produced it, and it's got some guest artists on there, and I played on it, and Alice, and other people, and it's a great album, you know. So you can see it online. He's done some videos for it. It's really
look into,
you know,
that.
Kane and I talk all the time. He's one of my very best friends, and. He's thriving. He does other things as well, but he's a great musician, and he's, he's still at it.
One more thing I want to talk about, and then I'll let you go. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to let people know?
Man, you've really done your homework, so I'd like you to know that I appreciate that. Yeah, it's nice to do a real interview.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you. As I mentioned the last time we talked, I was doing commercial rock, and the album 4 came out in 2006, not 16. I correct myself. And one of the things that stood out, it was military-based. The world was going to hell, as it still is, but the American troops were at the forefront of everyone's mind. And this album, 4, was dedicated, as I recall, to the armed forces. So what was the connection to you with the military? Was there any direct connection, or were you just in a patriotic moment at the time?
Well, I know a lot of soldiers. I mean, I've played military bases, and I've met a lot of people in the military, and a lot of times they get a bad rap, and we don't take care of them and stuff. And it had been a long time for a Winger album, and I'm one of these people, like, I won't make an album unless I feel like I have a reason.
Okay.
And so one day it just hit me that I wanted to, you know, do this record kind of from a soldier's perspective. And it didn't all turn out that way, but there's half the record is kind of written in from that perspective. And from the conversations I've had with my friends that have been, you know, on the front lines and stuff like that. So, especially Right Up Ahead, you know. There's a song called Right Up Ahead on there. And Blue Suede Shoes, you know. And, yeah, so, you know, that's kind of how it turned out. It's a very progressive album, and it was really where I felt like the future of the band was, and musically very deep. And
very mature album, coming from where the previous albums had been, which were more just rock and roll, have a good time albums.
Yeah, well, the thing is that I had gone through this whole metamorphosis of composition, you know. So I was looking at the music completely differently. You know, for example, that song Generica, there's no like central key to the song. It's largely just floating in the never never land of tonality, you know. So the solo on M16 is completely atonal, you know. And so a lot of it was a composition experiment for me. I mean, it's funny, when we were recording it, Rev would be sitting there. There's a DVD out there called The Making of Four that's very funny to watch. It's, you know, I just set up a camera in front of us when we were working, and Rev would be like, "Oh my God, it's weird day again," because I'd throw all this stuff at him that's just not your standard rock, you know. But ironically, it's turned out to be, Rev will tell you that Winger Four is his favorite Winger album.
It's definitely different. It stands out from the pack. And I've got two cuts here that we can do either or. Blue Suede Shoes, which is the one I lean towards. But I also like M16. You had mentioned that. I've got them both queued up here. Which one would you like us to play?
Oh, is it the album version of Blue Suede Shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great, man. I mean, that's really...
It's 336. I believe that's the one from the album. Or is that the single?
I don't know.
Because I know that was the lead,
you know,
single.
Why don't you choose this one? Because you know, they're both, those are my two favorite songs. Well, right up ahead, M16 and Blue Suede Shoes are my three favorite songs on that album. So why don't I let you choose?
Okay, well, let's do Blue Suede Shoes, and we'll be back to say goodbye to Kip Winger right after this. Don't forget, he'll be performing at The Room in Highland Sunday, December 15th, and you can get ticket information at ticketweb.com. We'll be back a final time with Kip after this.
I wonder why.
Red, White, and Blue. Rockin' patriotic there. That's off the Winger album 4, which came out 2006. My guest today has been Kip Winger, namesake of the band, solo artist, composer, theatrical lyricist, musician, and lots of things going on in the Kip Winger world. Get Jack, a killer musical. Watch for that to be more news on that. Watch for more Winger albums, solo albums. And Kip, where's the best place where fans can keep up with you and all your projects?
KipWinger.com, WingerTheBand.com, and all the Facebooks that are associated with that, Twitters and Instagram. And we appreciate all of you going to like those pages, if you will. And, you know, we'll keep everybody up on it. And for those of you who have not seen my solo show, I'm looking forward to being there. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. So if you get a chance to come out, we'd love to see you.
And again, that is Sunday, December 15th, next weekend at The Room in Highland, a beautiful facility, a beautiful venue. Paul is a great promoter, and again, that's at 8353 Indianapolis Boulevard. Tickets are still on sale at ticketweb.com. I'm sure there's a Facebook out there with The Room in Highland that'll give you more information. Kip, last thing, and that is with the solo album, with the Winger album, band album, do you have a target date that you're shooting for either of those?
No, I don't. Because when I start doing that, I'm like, I start compromising the stuff. But we work fast. Reb and I work very fast. So sooner than later on the Winger album. And to be honest with you, my solo album's just kind of writing itself. I just started writing some stuff, and I think it'll be done sooner than later as well, which is ironic because I haven't had, the band hasn't had an album out in 5 years, and then my solo album hasn't been out for 10 years. So All the stuff's going to come at once. But, creativity is an elusive thing, and I spent years on Get Jack. So it's all coming soon.
Very good. Well, best of luck, and travel safe to get to us here in Northwest Indiana.
Okay, man. Thanks for having me.
Kip, thank you for giving us time today. I do appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Let's close out with a song that made him a household name and had all the girls screaming. This is 17, taking you back in time to the 80s with the one, the only, Winger. Stay tuned. Grant Fitch coming up.